Welcome to TNT's Hit Songs from Mars, where we unravel the stories behind some of pop's most unlikely hits.
From simple curiosities to songs that changed the world, we examine the socio-political and cultural factors that contributed to the success of these surprising outliers.
And the impact these songs had on society. I'm Tom Thompson.
And I'm Tyler Ralston. And together we're
TNT.
Tom, how do?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
Blissfully unaware.
That's a good state to be in.
Yeah, it's not bad. You can just kind of tune out the world, but it doesn't last very long, just like any other escape.
Yeah, the world requires a bit of tuning out at the moment, it seems, to maintain our sanity.
Yeah, tell me about it. But yeah, I mean, it's you know, it is what it is, and that's that.
What's going on with you?
Oh, not much. Pretty cold here today. So that was a shocker. It was actually hot on Friday. So
by cold, you mean like 80 degrees or?
Yeah, no, I guess it'd be, you know, minus seven or something like that for you guys.
And you're what? No.
Yeah. Not really? Right now. It warmed up, but earlier it was pretty chilly this morning.
Huh. It's chilly here too.
Yeah, but it always is. It's Canada.
True.
I mean, you got June, July, August, and winter.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty much it. No, we actually call it construction and winter. Those are the two seasons.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. That pretty much sums it up.
I had to close my beloved cottage last week. That's always a bummer.
Yeah, that marks the end of a year and all of that. Mm-hmm. And so no more working from cottage for you, so you have to seek counseling or something like that. And you have to report to work once in a while. That's really going to suck.
Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah, you got
it. It's really conflicting with my lifestyle. I'm not pleased about it.
Yeah, and you can't be roasting oysters Rockefeller as you're working.
I'll have you know, I've been in the office twice already this week.
Oh, that's
good. And it's only Thursday.
That's right. The minimum bare requirements as per the Canadian federal government. Yeah, that's pretty good.
You're drinking from your gourd again?
Of course, my mate. And it was it led to some red rip-roaring discussions in my class, so I'll take it.
Really?
Nothing like a good South American traditional stimulating herb to get things going.
Good for you, Ty.
Yeah. So anyway, we're doing pretty good. Podcast is approaching what, 6,000 downloads, and that's getting to be pretty respectable. With our listener in Botswana, now we have 114 countries.
Yes,
and that's pretty good.
Botswana. Yeah, that was a new one.
Yeah. Did you get any feedback from our last podcast from Chase Lounge?
You know, Ty, it's very divided.
Okay, I thought it would be. We had a debate going.
Yeah, a lot of people are like, I'm with Ty, and a lot of people are like, Ty's cuckoo. No one's been kind of a moderate about it. It's been either side.
And I think that's exactly where we were. I mean, we were very civil in our debate. I felt kind of bad just because you were all into it. And I felt like, you know, it's when a loved one gives you a Christmas gift and you're disappointed and they see you're disappointed. And they know you're disappointed and everyone's miserable. And finally, it's just sort of like, oh, yeah, thank you for the lovely gift. Hummingbird, turtleneck, turtleneck. And you hoped for an engagement ring inside that tiny box. But your stupid former future husband only bought you socks. Now your face is all contorted as you're trying to erase the truth behind that smile. Don't you know you've got a case of present face, present face. I was straight up about what I thought about the song, the weaknesses and strengths and all that.
Yeah.
And it does appear periodically reappear into my head, some of the riffs of the guitar, not in a bad way.
Yeah.
Until the vocals start, then I want it just to go away.
That's funny. Yeah. Well, the funny thing is that, you know, a lot of people are kind of like, oh, I'm with Ty. It's a boring song. But that's also kind of the point, right? It's a hit song from Mars, and I think we did what we say we're supposed to do, which is examine the cultural factors that contributed to the success of that song. And I think the cultural factor was that we were in a worldwide pandemic and people wanted to have fun.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, as I think you pointed out, people now don't want to be associated with that song in some way because, oh God, I don't want to think about that era. You know, just like when you see the odd, maybe it's different in Canada, the odd people were still wearing masks. It's like, oh yeah, just a reminder of like that agonizing time. And it's not quite over. Never will be. It's going to be with us.
Yeah.
But you know, the lockdowns and all that kind of stuff, just like, I don't want to be reminded of the escapes that I used during that time period.
Yeah. When you drank like a whole bottle of whiskey, and you probably didn't drink whiskey for a little while after that.
Do tell, Tom. Are you talking about breakfast this morning?
No, I'm talking about you and your little infamous Bruce Beach binge with the bottle.
Yeah, that was rum. And that was,
oh, was it rum?
That was bad. Yeah. No, that's.
I bet you didn't touch rum for a while after that.
Yeah, I think that's probably a safe bet. I think everyone's got a story like that. The most common one is with tequila, because tequila has a raunchy taste anyway. But if you get sick on it, it's like you don't ever want to smell that stuff again.
It's also a different kind of high, I find. Like it's almost like being high more than drinking.
Yeah, it's an impure alcohol, and the more impurities you got, the better buzz you got. Tequila is good. Yeah, I agree with you on that. Gin is great, and of course, like red wine is the most impure thing out there, and it's you know it's often seen as the best buzz at all, and it's the worst, and it corresponds with the worst hangover. You know, vodka is just a, you know, that you just sort of go numb. It's a painkiller, and the hangover is minimal. I mean, granted, you drink too much alcohol, you're going to feel like crap. That's just the bottom line. Doesn't matter what it is.
Yeah. That's interesting about the impurities, though, in red wine. I didn't know that.
I think that's how it works. And gin's very impure, and hence it's a wonderful buzz, but a very bad hangover. I haven't done a martini in years. You know, it's what used to be my favorite thing to make. By the way, so on that topic, we were going to talk about for an introduction at some point, I would make the world's greatest martini. I teach you how to do it on the podcast. So maybe we can do that next time.
Well, maybe we might have to have like some kind of a disclaimer at the beginning, because I've had a few of your infamous martinis, and wow, they really send you on a trip to somewhere, and then the next day you don't remember your name.
I know. There's a limit. Yeah. At any rate, if we do the martini thing, we'll let our listeners know what they need if they want to play along, or if they just want to avoid the topic altogether to skip the minute 12.
Right.
Okay. On that note, let's move ahead and go ahead and do the song. Okay. This song is, well, let me just play the song without further ado. I'll just preface it with, it's not going to surprise me if you're not familiar with it, okay? It is a song that's out there. It's pretty old, but it's still played quite a bit. But it still wouldn't surprise me, because I don't know if it's in your wheelhouse of the kind of music you listen to, that kind of stuff.
Okay.
So without further ado, I will play. Here we go.
Okay. Nice voice. Okay. I don't know who it is, but
okay,
yeah,
fair
definitely
enough.
I know the song.
I'm going to play one more part of it.
Okay. Oh. Interesting. What is it? Don't steal my sunshine?
That's it.
Interesting.
Yeah. Okay. There's a lot going on here. So let me go ahead and give you the information. You obviously had heard the song. It had to have crossed your sensory perception at some point. It's just out there too much. Here's the deal. This is the Andrea True Connection is the name of the band.
Funny name.
Yeah. And her birth name was Andrea Truden, her stage name, Andrea True.
Okay.
And this is a 1976 hit of the roller disco era.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
It's one of the defining moments of the roller disco era. I'll talk about the difference between the roller disco era and the Saturday Night Live era a little later.
Okay.
Made it to number 4 in the United States, number 1 in Canada.
Yes.
Okay. And on VH1's top 100 greatest dance songs of all time, it made it to number 44, which is quite an achievement. Okay.
Indeed.
So let me tell you a little about the song here. Okay. Andrea True, which is a stage name. Again, Andrea Truden was her birth name. But Andrea True had many, many, many aliases. She went by many different performing names because she got her start not in music, but in the adult film industry. Okay, she was a porn star in the early 70s. Yeah.
Okay.
Starting in the early 60s, she went into porn and stayed in there until this, from some accounts, it ended in the mid 70s, some it went into the 80s. Okay. Either way, she was a big star in the New York porn scene during the golden age of porn.
Okay.
Now, I'm willing to bet when she went to New York as a person in her early 20s, that was not her goal. Her goal was probably to enter the entertainment. She didn't enter the entertainment industry, but a more mainstream branch of the entertainment industry. Mm-hmm. So Andrea was born in Nashville, Tennessee, which might be surprising because if you hear her voice, which you did, you might think European. Some European, she sort of sings in a sort of generic European speaking and English voice, but not English accent, like something like ABBA.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, something along those lines. So she's from Nashville, Tennessee, the son, the daughter of Slovenian immigrants. And her mother at one time in her life was a professional musician, a professional polka performer.
Okay.
But Andrea grew up in a musical family and was recognized as a teen for her piano talent. Okay, she learned how to play the piano quite well. And in the late 60s, in her early 20s, she moved to New York to try to make it into showbiz. She got bit parts here and there, you know, some very small parts in movies that were big at the time, but nothing significant. But she eventually found her way to the adult film industry, where she became an early porn star. And she earned somewhere in the ballpark of $500 a film, which is not much. I suspect not even for those days. But again, it was a steady income that was in the entertainment industry. And something, and it was also, you know, the times were different, and it was something other than waiting tables. It paid better. And I think the idea was she would eventually branch out into something else. And in those days, because porn was such a niche thing, I mean, if you wanted to watch a porn movie, you would have to go to a porn theater and they would, you know, play the actual movie. There were no VHS tapes. So it's conceivable that you could enter into that world and leave it without having a big stigma attached.
Interesting.
And in that era, a few people pulled that off. One little known one is Sylvester Stallone, did porn movies.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
He was paid $200 for 2 days of filming and starred opposite Henrietta Holm. She was Kitty and he was Stud. The plot, if you can call it that, was thin. Simply put, the film is about Kitty and Stud's relationship, culminating in a group sex party at the movie's climax that gives the film its title.
And they're out there. I mean, it's he did porn movies. There were a couple others that found their way to the mainstream. So anyway, this is where the whole thing gets interesting, okay? And what we're going to see, the story behind the song, was it was a stroke of genius how she pulled this off. And it was something along the lines of she turned a bad situation into pay dirt. I mean, she spun hay into gold on this one. So do you want to hear the story of how that happened?
I sure do.
Okay, off we go. Okay, so at the height of her career as a porn star, she managed to land a gig in Jamaica. Not for porn, but to do a television commercial for a real estate company in Jamaica. You know, it paid $1,500. So, hey, that's an opportunity. So she flies down to Jamaica in late 75, early 76. And she does the commercial. They pay her. You know, the business transaction went without a hitch, and that was that. But that's where she ran into trouble. As she was leaving Jamaica, what she discovered was that she was not allowed to leave with her money. Okay.
Oh.
Basically, it was like this. The guy who was president of Jamaica at the time was a guy named Michael Manley, who was openly sympathetic and supportive of Fidel Castro. And he was a big land reformer and a big just reformer in general. And as a result, he earned the ire of the United States government under Richard Milhouse Nixon. And he had to face sanctions, okay? And, you know, as is often a weapon by the U.S. government. Mm-hmm. And as a result, they had capital exportation asset. You couldn't leave the country with your assets, basically, you know, if you earned them there. Mm-hmm. So basically, here was the deal. She's in the airport, and the money's hers. No one's trying to take it. Mm-hmm. But the Jamaican authorities said, you can't leave with that money. And what they basically, the message was simple. You got to spend that before you go or you lose it. Okay.
Wow.
Yeah. So
that's crazy.
Yeah, it is. So what are you going to do? But they need, you know, it was a retaliation for the retaliation of the retaliation. And, you know, so you got to spend the money in Jamaica. So she's at a loss, but she quickly regained her wits. Again, people that knew her saw her as a pretty quick-witted person. Mm-hmm. She called her friend in New York City, okay, a guy by the name of, I forget his name off the top of my head, Greg Diamond, okay?
Good name.
Good name, yeah. Greg Diamond, who was a low-level musician, producer, songwriter on the New York scene, especially for jazz and disco. And so basically what it amounted to was he managed to make something resembling a living through his art, through being a producer and being a musician, songwriter, etc. So she's friends with Greg. She's like, Greg, here's the situation. Do you have any songs ready to go? And he's just kind of like, you're calling from where? Not Jamaica, New York. No, Jamaica, the country. And so he's like, well, yeah, I do actually. She's like, get down here. I'll pay you and all this other stuff. Just come down. Mm-hmm. So Greg Diamond, just let me tell you a little about Greg. Greg Diamond, again, he was one of these people that, you know, was not a terribly high level person, but managed to sort of hook up with different things that were pretty interesting. His early gig, he was the drummer and percussionist for a pioneering artist by the name of Joe Braith. You ever heard of Joe Braith?
No.
Okay. Joe Braith was the first openly gay performer to be signed by a major record label.
Oh, wow.
Okay. And so he was percussion for Joe Braith. Let me play a little Joe Braith for you here.
Okay.
All right, there's a little Joe Braith for you.
Wow.
So he hooked up with this guy. Later, Greg Diamond, after this success of this song, will hook up with Luther Vandross, okay?
Mm, okay.
Who was still unknown at the time, but about to break into, you know, he was a big, you know, singer in the 80s. Mm-hmm. Luther Vandross was at that point working with David Bowie on his Young Americans album as a backing singer.
Okay? Oh, cool.
So again, there's all these connections there. But anyway, Greg Diamond, back to the song. Greg Diamond flies to Jamaica, and you know he's aware of what's going on. And what they do at that point was take her money, the $1,500, which at that time would have been considerably more in terms of its purchasing power, mm-hmm. and in Jamaica would have been a lot more.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Sure. They rented studio space and they hired local musicians to do a song that Greg had composed. And this was it. Okay. It was a disco song, a jazz song. So they hired all these local guys, like, you know, people that's like, well, who can we get? Well, this guy plays trumpet. It's like, well, it's, you know, a disco song doesn't necessarily mean trumpet, but we'll get what we can take. So
Yeah.
So they hire all these musicians and they came up with the song. Okay. So they spent all her money and then took the recordings and left.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So what ended up happening? Everybody's happy. It's a win-win. She's happy. She didn't lose her money. Mm-hmm. Jamaican government's happy. She spent it there and mm-hmm. There's no, you know, law against returning with a recording you made. They could care less.
And paid for all those local musicians, which is great. Local economy, invested in the local economy.
Exactly, which was the whole point of the not allowing the capital to leave the country.
Yeah.
So she converted $1,500 into a top 10 hit. Okay. Amazing. And presumably made way more money than that $1,500 would ever, you know, would ever have done.
Yeah.
So off they went. And then, so the song becomes a massive hit on the disco scene. Okay. Mm-hmm. The roller disco era. And again, you can almost envision going around that roller rink and hearing that song playing.
The way I was bopping there, it felt like I could feel the rhythm of the roller derbying.
Were you a roller skater, Tom?
You know what? Disco I don't think roller. I ever did. I never roller. I don't think I ever did.
You were the kid just looking at everyone else going around in a circle like a big
I don't
dork.
Actually think it was a thing. Like I don't like when I would have been at that age. I feel like maybe my sisters were involved. You weren't, you were too young for that, I'm sure.
Yeah, I vaguely remember going to roller rinks. You know, there was one in King Carton.
Yeah, it didn't surprise me.
Yeah, and I went to that. I barely remember it though.
Okay. Yeah, I don't remember. I sort of vaguely remember going to a rink maybe like once or twice, but.
Okay. And yeah, fair enough.
It's kind of coming back though. I feel like it kind of died, but it was kind of coming back. I had a friend who was really into it for a while.
I can remember roller skating. I can hear Der Kommissar or The Fixes Saved by Zero as I'm going around the rink as a seventh grader. But I would have been too young to remember the disco roller disco era.
Yeah. Did you know that I took a photo of a roller derby woman for a cover of a book?
No, I did not.
Yeah, I used to work for this. It wasn't really like a stock. It was really cool. It was sort of like a stock agency, but not really. The way it worked was these companies would post an ad saying, "We're looking for this kind of shot." And I guess the idea was that the things they were looking for were too unusual to be found in a stock library kind of thing. So, and they actually paid pretty well. And so I noticed this one went up that it was like roller derby person for this book cover or whatever. And no one was submitting entries for it. And I was like, well, I'll give it a try. It was a good payout. And, I gave it a try and I actually got it.
Right on.
Pretty cool. I think it's called the book's called Demon Derby.
All right. And so one entry, one winner. That's great, Tom.
Well, I got a major book cover out of it. Probably the biggest payout for a photo job I ever did.
No kidding. I was being facetious. I think it's great. actually, when I was in Tucson, Arizona, I knew some roller derby queens. Mm-hmm. And they had a league out there. So of course, you know, I'm going to go check it out.
It's an interesting culture.
To say the least, this subculture of like all the teams had a different theme. One of them were waitresses and they're beating each other up, you know. One of them were prisoners. They were female inmates. And just everyone had their own theme. I just remember one of the waitresses was named All Night Dinah, you know. And she was the rough.
Yeah. They all have great names, and it's a really interesting. I learned a lot about it through doing that photo shoot because I didn't know much about it. It's very, very cool.
I remember, of course, Jim Croce's legendary roller derby queen. But I was just getting ready.
my hat, wish you caught my eye, and I put it back, and I ordered myself a couple of more shots and beers. The night that I fell in love will roll a derby queen around and round, all round and round.
You would have thought it was a, you know, an early 70s thing, and it was, but it was revived. Oh, right. Another part of the thing, and they had the announcer that was a complete smartass. It was hilarious. And but every roller derby, they had, I guess, probably Tucson's worst band playing during the intermission. And,
okay.
And I remember the band. I stood in awe and disbelief when I watched them. The band was called Blood Spasm. And it was death metal.
Oh, wow.
And it was all these guys in their probably late 30s, early 40s that presumably still lived in mom's basement. And they were so bad. Like, you know, they would enter, we're Blood Spasm.
Right. Okay.
And like, so, and then just this blast of noise.
We got cactus, blowing up beaches. We got cactus, we came here for jobs. Money's a thing, but nobody told us it's all Burger King. Minimum wage, maximum slave. The beat is not cheap, and I already gave. I don't know if this one is a gateway to heaven, but you're never more than tempting from a 7-Eleven. The soul's got legs. We got cactus, growing the forest. We got cactus, Wyoming's got wildlife. We got cactus, driven
the. I just remember one moment where the band, just for this brief fleeting moment, they were all in time. And then they disintegrated back into noise again. And for that moment, it put into contrast just how bad they were.
Right.
Because then it's like, that was music for a second. And then.
That's blah, so blah, funny. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. That's so interesting, actually.
Yeah.
I heard a theory this week that the original death metal style of singing came from someone imitating a Cookie Monster.
That is amazing.
Tastes so good. Cookie. I will eat them up. Cookie. Cookie. I will eat them up. Cookie. Cookie, cookie, cookie. Cookie.
You know what? It kind of makes sense.
Yeah, or I could also see, or Oscar the Grouch would be a similar one. I could also see, you know, someone's like, that sounds like the Cookie Monster.
Well, yeah, yeah. I can't remember what band it was.
Like, yeah,
I have to look it up.
It could be any number of them. Just like I remember seeing a cover band doing AC/DC's Thunderstruck, and I'm like, that sounds like Grover from Sesame Street.
You've been Thunderstruck.
You know, if you don't have the booming voice, you sound like frickin' Grover.
It's true.
Yeah, so that's pretty far out. All right, we got into some interesting stuff here, going back to the early 70s. But apparently, this is a pretty big thing of disco fanatics. There's the roller derby era, and then there's the Saturday Night Live era.
He's very good, yeah.
He's the best.
Hey, man, he's great. He's the king out there.
John Travolta in Saturday Night Fever.
Roller derby was sort of the original era, and then it stopped. It was over. And the actors in the movie, like, for as far as they were concerned, you know, disco was so last year or so 2 years before. So people like Travolta and the other people in the movie were like, no, wait a minute. This movie is like supposed to have taken place 2 years ago. We don't quite get what's going on. But the producers are basically, well, no, it's supposed to be modern. It's supposed to be right now. But like disco ended 2 years ago. But when the movie and the song Saturday Night, you know, Staying Alive, not only reinvigorated disco, but made it the dominant sound for the next 5 years.
That's really interesting.
Right.
So roller derby was the original form of disco.
It was
is that what you're saying?
The earlier era, and then you had the Travolta era of the, you know, the
yeah. But it kind of makes sense to me because when I think about disco dancing, like in the Travolta era or whatever,
right?
Those movements, it makes me think of actually, like, it makes sense. It comes from roller skating. Like, just the movements seem like they're an extension of rolling around the rink.
Right.
It makes sense to me now.
Yeah.
Right?
Because the feet don't leave necessarily. Yeah,
yeah. Right.
The finger goes up in the air. And
I mean, it's a better effect when you're zooming around a roller rink. When you think about it, like, those moves, this all makes sense.
Okay. So, we're learning something as we go here. But yet, I think it was the movie made disco all the thing. It penetrated every nook and cranny of, the world. But, during the roller disco era, much less so. It was sort of an urban sound, and that was that. It came and went.
Was it the movie that really pushed, or was disco, like, was the, you know what I mean? Was it?
I think it was the movie.
Yeah, okay.
And of course, it revived the Bee Gees, who now, by definition, are the disco band.
Right.
Like, before, everyone, people sort of know now that the Bee Gees were, they had this maybe 10 years of sound, and it was folk in the beginning and, Massachusetts, all that stuff. And, they were just, they kind of hung on, but then disco made them the disco band.
Yeah. There's a doc about them recently out. I heard it was amazing. I haven't seen it.
Oh, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
I'll have to check that one out.
I think I might have tried it, but I just didn't feel invested enough in the band to really get into it. But some friends said it was a really good music doc.
Okay. Because, they were real performers and they defined an era and all that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
And went on, then they had to face the disco backlash, and
true.
They continued to write songs. Like, for example, we talked about this, I think, in a previous podcast. Islands in the Stream was written by the Bee Gees. And then they become elder statesmen of pop, and then they spend the next 30 years until there's one left. There are two/three out of the four died, and then two/three, the youngest brother Andy Gibb had just joined the band, and he died shortly thereafter as a very young man.
Oh, so what happened to him?
I think it was like this. He was way younger than the other one, so he wasn't part of the original band, but he wanted to make it into showbiz, and he kind of did, but, it's through the influence of his brothers. He was a real handsome guy, and he had how talented he was, I'm not sure, but good enough. So he got some gigs along the way, like he was a host of Solid Gold for a while. He had a couple low-level hits. I can't even think of the one that comes to my head. I can hear the song, I can't hear the words. Night Chasing or something like that. But the problem was, he was a genuinely very sensitive guy, and he couldn't deal with the rigors and pressure of the music industry. So, more and more cocaine to keep himself going. Basically, he did himself in. He just wore his heart out before he was even 30 years old.
Right. Wow. That's sad.
It is. It is sad. And then again, the only one left now is Robin Gibb, who was the falsetto, the king of falsetto, that sort of defined the sound.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's see. Are you a big fan of disco, Tom?
No.
Okay. I didn't think so.
I don't hate it.
What I've discovered about disco is that there's about 20 songs that are great and a whole lot of other songs that are not. And it's kind of like playing the violin. You're good or you ain't. And there's nothing in between.
Yeah, that's fair.
And I'll give this one its due. It's pretty cool. And it's not, yeah, it's by no means a standard disco song.
Well, and I love that because it was just sort of like the musicians they happened to have on hand that made it different and probably a hit too, because it had a little bit of a different vibe to it.
Whoever's playing that trumpet, that was one smooth dude.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, it's great.
I mean, whoever they hired, they got their money's worth on him.
Yeah, well, I'm sure there's like so many good musicians in Jamaica.
Well, it's like Buena Vista Social Club, where you know, Ry Cooter went to Cuba, and you know, all these incredible musicians that just barely made it their whole lives. You know, they never made a whole lot of money. Don't care too much for that particular documentary, but because he kept inserting himself in ways that he should not have inserted himself.
Yeah,
like there's slide guitar in songs that slide guitar ought not to be in.
Yeah, it's funny because there's that one song that's really big from the Buena Vista Social Club, and it was funny when I was in Cuba. It was just kind of like a joke. Like every group of musicians we saw, like at what time are they going to pull out that song?
Okay,
because I all played that song. You know the one I'm talking about.
It's kind of like going to Halifax. At some point, you're going to hear Barrett's Privateers. You know, that's just a given from any band in town. You will hear that song, and you're expected to know every word of it.
Ever seen? Yeah. God damn them all. I was told we'd cruise the seas for American gold. We'd fire no guns, shed no tears. Now I'm a broken man on a Halifax pier, the last of Barrett's privateers. Oh, well, said Barrett, cried the town.
Good song, too. I mean, the fact that a cappella and all that kind of stuff. Let me just kind of wrap up with the song. We can take it any direction we want after that. But you recognized early on that one little bridge in the song was a massive hit in its own right later. It's the basis for Len's Steal My Sunshine, Canadian brother-sister team Len. I know.
Well, what I'm shocked by is how much it's exactly like their version.
No, it's a lift.
they did not do much to alter that. So I'm like, oh God, that they really. I actually didn't know that wasn't their backing track. You know, it's basically backing tracks.
No, it's a direct lift.
Yeah,
it's a direct lift. And Greg Diamond, I think the impression I get, he was well aware of it and got royalties for it. He got songwriting credit. Here's the weird part of it. Greg Diamond was alive when they were recording it, but he never lived to see the song release. He died as it was being recorded.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, but he had gastrointestinal issues or whatever. Died, you know, younger than we are now. And but yeah, the song became a big hit, and it's that's a hit song from Mars in its own right.
You know what, Ty? It was actually on my long list.
Oh, was it?
Well, yeah.
Blow another one.
No, I actually think that I stepped away from it because it's not really weird enough. It's an interesting story, but it's I don't know. I just didn't think it was on the short list for HSFMs.
Right. Didn't make the cut.
Yeah.
No, but it's a weird song because it incorporates obviously disco and then you know, that sickly sweet chorus, Mm-hmm. And then this sort of
very catchy
rap-esque thing.
Yeah. To be honest, I can all when I think of that song, all I think of is, oh no, I can picture it. I was going to say all I think of is the chorus, the singing, but now I can kind of hear the rapping bit as well.
It's rap light. I don't know what you'd even call it.
It really is.
Yeah. In rap themes.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a catchy song. And I know I can't remember myself. I'm not sure, but I remember a lot of my friends really liked the girl.
Oh yeah.
Thought she was very attractive. I don't remember her. So maybe she didn't have much of an impression on me, or maybe I've never seen the video.
She was very cute.
Okay.
Yeah. And wasn't it like a brother and sister or something like that?
Yeah.
Okay.
And apparently they weren't speaking to each other when the song was recorded, but you know, one's in the studio at one point and the other one comes in later. They can.
Oh yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
So, and they didn't, they're a one hit wonder, I would say. Like,
absolutely.
I don't recall anything else from them.
And Andrew Atru's a one hit wonder in the truest sense, no pun intended, the truest sense of the word. But okay, just to wrap up with her, she died just a few years back, but she kept trying. Again, the stories conflict on when she left the porn industry, but she tried to make it as a singer and apparently had zero talent as a singer. Greg Diamond basically is like, oh, it's a miracle what you can do with delay and things like that.
Oh. Because it sounds pretty good in the song.
Yeah, she does. And it's she tried to make it as a singer, but there's only so far you're going to take that song. But she kept getting royalties. Apparently, she successfully managed to get her name attached to it because she claims to have written the lyrics.
Okay.
And I guess, or Greg was willing to go along with that, or she did, or whatever. You know, she was involved enough that she gets royalties for that song.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. And so that probably kept her going for much of her life. Again, at the latest thing, it comes up here and there. Probably the latest thing was a very recent Honey Bunches of Oats commercial where the song appears.
Why settle for a one-note cereal? Get more with Honey Bunches of Oats. Four nutritious grains come together for more taste, more texture, more healthy sense.
And, you know, how do you want your Honey Bunches of Oats? Mama, ma.
Right.
So yeah, how do you want your Honey Bunches of Oats is an important question that needs to be addressed.
Indeed. Thanks for tuning in to TNT's Hit Songs from Mars. We hope you enjoyed yourself and learned a few things along the way.
For a complete list of songs you heard in this episode, visit us at hsfm.buzzsprout.com. We hope you'll support the artists we featured by purchasing their music.
If you liked this episode, please subscribe to the podcast and you'll receive new episodes as soon as they become available. While you're at it, if you could give us a rating or review wherever you get your podcast, that would really help us out. We would like to thank The Reverb Syndicate for providing the theme song for our podcast. They have an extensive catalog of tunes just as rockin' as the one you hear here.
Hear, hear.
You can find them at thereverbsyndicate.ca and on Facebook, SoundCloud, and Bandcamp, which typically pays artists the most. We would also like to thank Eric Minot for designing our podcast icon. You can find his design and illustration work on Instagram at Minot Graphics. That's MINOGRAPHX. You can connect with us on Instagram at TNTS, Hit Songs from Mars.
Feel free to disagree, praise, correct, and chastise us.
We would also love to hear your idea of a hit song from Mars and why you think it fits the mold. Even better, if you felt like recording a voice memo and sending it our way, you can email us at hitsongsfrommars@gmail.com. We may even feature it on the show. Until next time, Earthlings.